This week on RSVNB Update, we're five fronts in and we cap off the Elder God Wars by taking the fight directly to the Lord of Chaos. We run through the Zamorakian Undercity, the Edge of Infernus, and the Crater of Edicts, covering cultists, demons, bosses, and drops. But no Wordle. This is RSVNB Update, episode 890, recorded Thursday, July 7th, 2022. Dungeons and Demons. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of RSVNB Update. You might notice it looks a wee bit different this week. This week, of course, we are covering the launch of the Zamorakian Undercity, Zamorak, Lord of Chaos. And we are doing a video podcast to commemorate that occasion. Joining us this week is Bears and Thaxi. Welcome aboard to the both of you.
Thank you.
How are you guys doing?
Good.
Good.
Beautiful summer day.
Yeah. Well, I was kind of asking in terms of the RS update, but. Sure, that works,
Shane,
too.
You know exactly how that's been doing. We've been doing duo and trio kills all week.
We have. And Bears has been getting involved on the Enrage side, which is stuff that you and I haven't done. And I don't think I'm going to do that for other reasons we'll talk about later in the show.
Yeah. I am a filthy casual who's been on a RuneScape break. And I was rusty when I came back this week, so I'm taking it easy and just chilling in a normal mode and having a grand old time.
Yeah, it's fun still. But, it's fun still doing it in normal. I do have to say that. In addition to that, it's going to be the entire boss this week, folks. And the accompanying elite dungeon will also touch on aftermath and the aftermath of the lore ramifications of this on a subsequent. Episode, yeah. either next week or a Lore Digger special, depending on how we want to do that. Because I feel like we need to scratch that itch now at some point. Now that we know exactly what happened with the mini quest and such,
it's actually over. Everything except Zaros and the Crying.
Zaros and the Crying, eh?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah. Fair enough.
I honestly kind of forgot there was a mini quest that came out this week.
You've been busy.
So did you do the mini quest?
The second I lost, so I was up and awake on the 4th of July, like at what?
True.
I guess it would have been 7 a.m.
Yeah.
And
something
I logged
like that.
In and I already had myself like geared up, ready to go, and I jumped in that portal. I kind of forgot the mini quest.
The first step of the mini quest is okay. Now go kill the boss. So you've done that. You've got the KC.
Let's go.
But <So. laughs> nonetheless, let me just handle the housekeeping before we get into that. Full show notes at update.show. You can join our Discord at rsvnb.com/discord. I'm Shane12088 in-game. Thaxi is, of course, at Thaxi. And Bears is currently at Sir Cubs, I believe. You can factor all that in.
I've yet to change it.
Yeah.
Should be that way for another month or so.
Okay.
The Chicago sports teams.
You've got another one. Once football season starts up, it'll go back to Bears.
So I wanna go into I wanna go play the cutscene first, because you mentioned that they launched this on July 4th of all days. Which is absolutely hilarious when we watch the cutscene. So we're just gonna go through that right now. For those who haven't.
Zamorak. My life has been long, and throughout it I have lived by one maxim. Liberty or death. Frenesque was the perfect world. Harsh, but fair. Survival forced my people to become the greatest of warriors. When the stranger promised us conquest and plenty, we followed him. It was a mistake. On Gilinor, I built a mighty empire in the name of the Dark God Zaros. But he and I did not share the same vision for the future. When I saw freedom, he saw only control. My people, once warriors, became priests, bureaucrats. sanitation engineers. To win their freedom, I struck down a god. To safeguard it, I became one. On Infernus, I led a downtrodden people to victory. Hostilius, a corpulent monster grown fat and indolent, maintained order through rules and laws. His laws did as little to protect him as his skin did. I strung up his corpse as a message for all to see. Such is the fate of all tyrants. The Avernic demons, now free, serve me willingly. Back on Gilenor, pretenders picked over the remains of my empire. For an age I battled them. An age of strife, of progress, of glory. While I fought on, none could establish the safety, the security that they so craved. For an age, Gilenor was truly free. But they conspired against me, and I was banished. In my long absence, this world has become weak. Saradomin's fingers are wrapped tightly around its throat, suffocating it. My demon army will make short work of its farmers, woodcutters, and fishermen. The survivors will be stronger, but they will have no choice. Gilenor's people will be free, or they will die. Liberty or death.
Released on July 4th, folks.
Liberty or death, he says. Give him liberty or give him death?
Exactly.
That's funny.
Was that intended that way? I gotta know that.
I'm sure it wasn't. There's no shot. Patrick Henry can roll over in his grave all he likes. That's... lost me. I mean, it's a lovely piece of irony.
It is. In any case.
In character lore, makes sense. Can't complain.
Yeah. And fine. Nice. So many people love Zamorak for taking that angle too. So, of course, more on that on the Lore Digger special on that. With that, you begin your dungeon clear. How did you guys feel about the dungeon clear? I mean, we were expecting it to be kind of like the other elite dungeons, right?
Yes, and I want to caveat this by saying that I think we should put this into a similar boat of, like, this kind of like the other EDs is, this is a separate issue from the boss, especially since once you get 25 KC or make a friend with 25 KC, hey, what's up?
You don't need to go through the dungeon anymore.
You don't need to go through the dungeon anymore. The dungeon becomes optional. But what they've done with the dungeon is that they've kept it, I mean, the GP per hour is competitive with other mob killing methods that are not, like, creating Ripper Demon Scrolls.
Yeah.
It is, generally speaking, just, it's just good ad clear. It's consistent. There's no, like, crazy gaps. They did a pretty good job through most of it of balancing it so you're not totally mobbed, with a couple exceptions.
Yeah. And overall, so, I mean, I feel like it was easy to clear on story mode. I think it was taking us about an hour in our duos, but we weren't necessarily pushing it, and we were killing some extra mini bosses.
When
along
we killed,
the way.
I think we ended up with saying like seven of the mini bosses are on the way ish. Which we'll talk to some about what they dropped too, but you know, yeah, we were spending relatively casually through the dungeon about 45 minutes or so, a little longer than maybe.
Yeah.
To clear through the whole thing, to get prepped and then jump into the boss fight. So whole encounter about an hour for us.
Yeah. How was it time-wise for you, Bears, on the dungeon clear on normal?
So do we want to talk like now, or do we want to talk my first run?
Let's talk what you're running now.
Those are two completely different.
Yeah, let's talk now. Let's say you know what you're doing.
Okay, so my last couple ones I could clear in about 25-ish minutes, and then then another 5 or 6 minutes on Zami.
That makes sense.
which is about what you'd expect.
The hardest part. Yeah, the hardest part is definitely not getting lost.
Okay.
I mean, it is a maze in there.
Yeah.
Well, Shane and I don't get lost anymore because we've taken our time through it, but you probably burst through and stack up a whole bunch of the ads together. When we do it, we do one pull at a time and we'll kill everything in front of us. We're also running on a couple of bows with no fractured staves and no, you know, I think I brought seismics to one of the runs. So. Yeah.
Once, you know. If you get them all grouped up, staffs back into Blood Barrage, and ooh, they go down quick, but there's still a lot of HP in some of those.
Yeah, and see, that's the thing. We're not magic users, us. I prefer ranged. Thaxi prefers ranged. I did use magic on my kill, which we'll talk about later. But overall, I think the thing that jumped out to me with this when looking at the dungeon is that it is entirely possible to view this, like you were saying, in two parts. You have the dungeon clear, and then you have the boss, and they're almost two different encounters that could potentially be played separately, dare I say, because of the way the loot chests work. And
honestly, I would do them separately. Like, the city is chill way to earn some extra cash, right?
Yeah, I mean, I got 2.3 mil on my story mode clear. I don't know if the chest was actually worth that much because of how things, you know, went down.
They did a pretty good job with putting very little in here that's going to devalue. We can talk about this because it's one of the next things to come up is the common drop table through the dungeon. And that's, you know, the common drop table through the dungeon is a lot of, like, runes, potions, potion supplies, right? It's stuff that's in huge volume and huge need in the economy. And then alkables. And the alkables can't lose any value at all because they're already where they're going to be. For anybody who's running auto alkers, this is a great week to fire those up. You make a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
I've definitely been filling mine.
I have that running right now.
Yeah. And then it's some odds and ends, right? Like, so there's new sources of crystal undead and Zamorak components. There's a new source of ultra compost out of there. Just stuff that is going to be in high use and demand.
I mean, undead components are so nice.
Yeah. Not having to buy and level Linza gear, not having to disassemble any shields. Like, it's such a cool thing. So. And then, of course, the things, the mini bosses, and all mobs through the dungeon can drop both shards. And I got a 6 melee shard drop on our last run.
Ooh.
Oh my!
That's
what ticked the lucky charm off, right?
No, the lucky charm was on 34 onyx dust. So it wasn't in a lucky charm, and it must have been off an ad because we hadn't killed any mini bosses, I think, in that time. So, like. And I checked between the jailer and the next time we ran into a chest in the chapel. And it's somewhere in there. We killed two mini bosses in that time. So it could have been one of the two mini bosses, but like still, like 6 of those things, that's a lot of shards. And then of course there's
that's
also
really
four
nice.
Four unique title scrolls that are dropped out of there, which is Hierophant, the High Priest and Priestess,
The
Witch, which is dropped off of the last one, and then Acolyte are the four titles. And those are, I believe, unique to dungeons and the mini-bosses. And then there's a unique lore book that is not on Master Quest Cape yet that drops from the crazed archaeologist in there.
I was wondering about that. Is that going to be on Master Quest?
I don't think so, because it seems like it's a relatively rare drop, and it's like
it's
getting reps
boss.
On that late
mini
into
boss,
the dungeon is really obnoxious.
Fair.
So
fair.
I hope
fair.
Not.
Fair. And it feels like a good drop table.
I think it will hold value, and it's something that, like, it's great for Iron Man, right? Like those potion supplies and runes and those kind of things.
Oh,
it's not
nice.
Enough runes. But that's a really good Iron Man drop table.
And that's been the story
so for
of
Iron Man having to run through here.
Of all the fronts, is that the drops have been really good for Iron Man.
Yeah, I mean, it's just stuff that
the
economy needs.
Who is the J-Mod that's designing these?
Sponge.
Is it Sponge?
Sponge.
Yeah,
Sponge,
he does a really good job with looking out for Iron Man.
Yeah. I mean, but just generically speaking, a lot of this stuff that drops. The Alchemist keys as well expand that drop table out significantly. I've got 100, I think, of those in my chest right now. From 5 runs or 4 runs through the dungeon. My first run through, I 100% cleared it. I killed all the mini bosses. I grabbed all the pages.
On normal mode.
On normal mode, yeah. And I did as many of the like achievements as I could, and then I think it was our third run because Shane did a solo and I did a solo, and then we've been duo since then. I think our third run we did with Reed.
Earth, yeah.
And I got you guys married in the church, yeah.
Yeah, that's one of the achievements, eh? There's an achievement where you can conduct the Red Wedding with the Zamorakian prayer book and one of the classic prayers. I forget the name of it with the heart above it. Retribution.
No, it's not the heart. It's the red splash.
Right, the red splash. Yeah, that was fun, and we'll talk more about some of the achievements after that. You guys want to move on to mini bosses? We kind of went through the common drops.
Before we do that, the HP scaling. Once you guys said you haven't done
enraged.
Much.
No, I dived into enraged.
Oh my goodness! Before they released that hotfix to lower it,
it was
I got up to like 80 or 90%. There were some of those demons that had more HP than Raksha.
Yeah, like I heard that Luca was running into demons that had 1.6 million health before they made that change.
Right,
and like, those don't take damage quickly. Those demons have a mechanic where you have 100% hit chance, but your damage is based off of your accuracy and not your ability damage.
Yep.
Which means that it doesn't scale off power armor. Interestingly, right? Like you think about all the ways that what that actually like mechanically means is super interesting, but. That just says that the tier of your weapon is the only thing that impacts your damage, and that you kill those things slow. So 1.6 mil health is a lot.
Yeah. No, once they lowered it, I mean, you can tell. But,
reasonable.
Like, it was such a big difference. I mean, it's still a bit more than I had hoped for. But, I mean, if they didn't have that much HP, I could be getting through that dungeon in 10, 15 minutes.
Well, so there you go.
I guess I get it.
Yeah. You run through, you just kill the ritual keepers, and you move along.
And story mode reduces it by 90%, not to 90%. That was another hot fix that happened this week. Mm. and then I think we found that just generally inside the dungeon, things scale proportionally in terms of life points.
Pretty much everything seemed to be two people, double HP. And I believe story mode is usually 50% HP, 10% damage.
Yep.
So you can extrapolate that out. But yeah, I mean, again, I like the way that it's balanced on normal mode /0%.
And
I can't imagine the HP on
this being too much higher. For clarification, are those the same thing? Normal mode and 0%? They're the same
thing?
Are. Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
You get onto the high scores for 0% when you do normal mode instead of doing just enrage. So.
Okay. That's what I thought.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. So, like, I'm going to give a nice shout out to our podcast host today. He is and has been, and I am going to continue to convince him to not change this if I can. Hold the spot that is the honor of last place
on the Zamorak leaderboard. You want to talk about that now?
I absolutely do. This man holding last place.
It's impressive.
I'm so proud of you, Shane. Honestly, no, it's impressive simply because, let's see, there are 8,963 people who have not tanked the boss for as long as you. You have won the tank test. Not
27 minutes and 44 seconds.
Yeah, win by a minute and 40 seconds, by the way. It is not close. This man went in there and just straight up yeeted some damage onto a protected Zamorak for half an hour and didn't die. That's honestly, even on normal mode, that's impressive. He doesn't have Crypt Bloom, guys.
This is
100% pure Shane.
And the thing is, people are wondering, how the hell did you do that in Clan Quest and RSB&B? And
I caught him so well. Man knows how to use defensives. I'm so proud. Proud parent moment.
It was two pieces. It was two pieces of Magic Acto, two pieces of Sea Singer, Blast Diffusion Boots, Animate Dead.
Augmented Sea Singer.
Augmented Sea Singers, of course. Perked budget wise, let's just say, because I don't invest too much into magic.
You had a mesh on, right? You didn't have the ancient cloak on. You weren't animating your cloak.
No.
Yeah.
I had my Zuck cape, yeah. And it was Sailfish Soup and Super Cerebrews. 27 minutes.
Oh, you did 44 Super Sarah Delmans.
Yeah.
He splurged and he shouldn't have.
Only for that first one.
Only for Ursula. I mean, I know you could go back and do it faster. Shane's been doing... Shane and I did a duo, our next kill, within 8 minutes and change, I think. Or 7 minutes and change, something like that. With us both on bows. We both did our first kills on Animate Dead.
Yeah.
But, yeah, since we've been back, it's been...
And see, that's the interesting thing. People are wondering how you did that. And I guess I'll say now, I haven't told anyone yet what that was, and we'll maybe talk more about this in the mechanics. But there's the Protectors and the Life Weavers that spawn in the Zamorak fight that will heal him and buff him and reduce your damage. And I was not killing those.
That Protector must have lived the entire fight, and I think he must have done that within your first few.
Yep.
I can't imagine. I mean, the boss, that's a lot of HP to burn through 400 at a time.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, greater concentrated blast or no. So,
right, and greater concentrated blast, corruption blast, modified armor power, and such.
You're running elite port swans, aren't you?
Yep.
You're running T-88s? Yeah.
No, so actually, no. I actually have a seismic wand. And
oh, okay.
Yeah, you do have a seismic.
You're offhand, Mikey guy.
The offhand is the elite port swan.
It doesn't make any difference. It's such a minor.
But
no, not one bit.
But that's my claim to fame this week. Absolute last.
One of these days, Shane, you'll just head back there with your SGB, and you'll get a 6-7 minute kill, and we're fine.
I know.
one of these days, we'll convince you to do it.
But that's the thing.
Do you want to?
Yeah.
Anyways, no, that's the high score is cool. That's fun.
Yeah.
Shout out to Shane 12088 for holding a prestigious spot on the leaderboard.
And I mean, at the same time, you have everybody else at the very top end at this point pushing 900% plus in rage, 13-minute long kill times and such. And, you know, that's something else that's gone really well with this boss, I feel, is the high score push for it.
Hmm. Yeah, it's been a cool to see the announcements all week.
Yeah.
Luca get his 1K last night? I'm sure he did. Yeah.
Yes, they were in a group.
They did. They did.
Mad lads.
That team was absolutely busted. They were so good.
Yep. They have since pushed here's another one with Lucario. He has a 10-20% enrage and a 1,000% enrage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and man, to the point where he's just uploading raw footage to his YouTube, be like, hey, I did a thing, bye. Let's back to score pushing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think this is the last thing I want to say on the high scores before we move into the mini bosses is that this has been really good for the community. I will say this because we're seeing community engagement on this that typically only old school sees.
We were talking about this.
It was so much fun to watch.
Yeah. I really like that they added that they had Ryan doing part of that. I know it's definitely a partiality thing and it's like, other streamers may have been angry that like he's getting a lot of the favoritism lately, but he is like he was the one to do it, and he's bringing a lot of people into that streaming scene and into that community vibe in a very real kind of a way. And he's done a lot in the past to like teach and be a pillar for the community. So, you know,
I mean, he was a part of the team that got the first 300%, I think,
and he caught up to them
290. But they are on 290, and one of their guys had to leave. And so he just grabbed some random person from his chat who's at 160. He's like, come join us for this 300% kill.
Oh, my.
And they're like, this random guy.
I didn't
know.
You can do that.
I mean, this guy was top 10
in solo.
I didn't
know you could pull people
in. He was good.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, this guy was top 10 solos. He just randomly got invited to this team, and he got an announcement for being one of the first 300%ers.
That's so fun, right? And like that's stuff that will live on. Like that'll get somebody will post that all onto the wiki at some point. All those announcements,
but
it's cool.
Really well done.
It's
all
good
right.
stuff.
And mini bosses.
So we've talked about a lot of the dungeon stuff. We've talked, you know, a little bit achievements and there's a burnt pages. It's your standard dungeon clear.
Lore.
Let's talk through mechanics.
Might need telegraphs and stuff, right?
Yeah, let's do mechanics for both mini bosses. Yeah, lots of telegraphs for the pages for mechanics for both the minis, and then we'll just jump straight into Zami.
Yeah. So of the 9 mini bosses in the dungeon, you only need to clear 3 of them. Or no, we said 2 of them, right? Because that last
technically,
one
is technically 2, yeah. Although I think all of us have been clearing 3. Yeah. We'll talk about it.
Yeah. First one is the jailer, Mephis the jailer.
Yeah.
I guess central asshole. Part of the city. Teleports away to a point where numerous folks thought that there was a bug when he disappeared.
Yeah. Well, because I didn't realize it was the third story when I first did it. I was so lost. I had to go and have several people send me a map of that jail before I realized there's just a whole ass other staircase up there.
I think I was one of the people that sent you that.
I believe you were, yeah.
Yeah.
He is time locked at some point where he teleports back to the first spot, because my first 2 kills, I sat there and waited for that.
Oh.
I had no clue where he went.
Do you know how long it was?
I'd say 3 to 5 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Because I did the same one, because I completely skipped going to the other side of the jail. I completely skipped that phase. And I wonder if I did 2 of those while I was looking it up, being confused, if I just stood there and I had Soul Split on and it just took care of it. It's possible. I turned auto retail on for the dungeon.
Right. But. Yeah, I remember you telling me to do that. And I think the thing that we should bring up with the jailer and is going to be a recurring theme throughout the dungeon if you're moving through the dungeon is that there are things out there that are going to heal the various NPCs, including this guy. Oof. So you got to watch out for what are they called? They're
Menders and Life
Leavers.
We ended up doing a lot of our runs, and I'm sure you've not been doing this, Bears, is going through and just clearing all of the jail. We just empty it before we start killing him because we don't want to be bothered with people. Yeah, no shot.
Yeah, no, I've just been grouping up as many as I can, killing them, and if the door opens, I go through it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's fair. Because we would go up and we'd clear out all the menders around his spawn points so that we didn't have to deal with them later.
Try
to to ease it off. I mean, it's one of those things that it makes it a lot more reasonable. If you're Crypt Bloom animate and you're just running around with a staff and blood spells, you don't need it.
Yeah.
You know, you're just fine. But
yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's the biggest thing I want to say to people for the jailer. Both on story mode and normal mode, is that watch out for the menders, and of course, know that he's going to teleport around to the various floors within the dungeon.
He's got an explosion that turns off your prayers for a couple of other things, but he's, yeah.
Yeah.
He's not too bad. To bring it back to the high scores, a lot of these teams were darting this guy because they didn't want to deal with him.
Wait, Jane, what's wrong with me? I've got 30 darts.
Same.
All these teams, yeah,
we should have been doing this.
But is that
one
worth
it? One person would go to each location, they just throw a dart.
Oh, you have to dart him 4
times. To teleport? Yeah.
You have to dart him 4 times? Okay, never mind.
That's not really worth it then.
But it still wasn't worth them waiting for him to teleport.
Yeah, they're pushing. They're score pushing.
That's
they don't
true.
Have their 25
That's
KC.
True.
They
only
a couple
need...
minutes by doing it.
Yeah, if they've been doing their weekly stuff every week, they probably have 25 darts just laying around. I mean, you don't need to use darts to kill anything.
No.
I mean, Ambassador, kind of, but honestly, Zamorak to me, and I'm totally derailing this because now this is another topic, but difficulty-wise, for normal mode, very similar to the Ambassador from my perspective.
Okay.
I think the end, enrage phase of the Ambassador is actually more challenging, but just on the whole, Zami has more HP and a wider variety of mechanics.
Yeah, yeah.
But difficulty-wise, I'd put them on par. Somewhere slightly above, somewhere above Araxor and sub-100 Telos, or maybe high, 80-90% Telos, definitely above 50.
Yeah, normal, caveat, normal, of course.
But there's no hard mode Telos.
Right.
But yeah, this is just talking about normal mode for Zamorak.
Yeah, sure.
So it's it feels eminently doable and not I mean, he's a god, but until you hit high enrages, he doesn't show it, you know?
Yeah.
Very reasonable difficulty-wise. And I think they did a good job with that balance. It feels very appropriate given the scale of the encounter.
Anything else on the Jailer?
Probably my least favorite part of the dungeon. is going to the jail.
I mean,
by far.
Yeah. Have you read through the lore book? Have you found the pages and read through the lore book?
No. Are you talking to me or Shane?
Yeah.
No,
yes.
It's not complete.
There's a handful of things. There's those, and then there was another lore book somewhere that I was reading that was like, beware the inmates. Like, the inmates are crazy. We opened up a jail, and the inmates are crazy. It might have been in the book. Where it seemed like whoever I was reading, was definitely in the same opinion of, like, oh, dear God, the jail.
Yeah.
Like, it feels a little meta. Like, maybe the J-Mods were like, we know this sucks. Have fun, kids.
And there's also something else in the jail that was crazy.
Oh, yeah. If you go to the third floor of the jail and you go into the second cell, you find our friend Mr. Z.
Oh.
Shout out to art by Maud Blackwitch. Well-deserved Easter egg.
The art that took social media by storm when it was posted. Something she did in her free time.
The roof on this room does not come off, even when you're standing under it with roofers.
Yeah, so if you're going to want to go in there, free cam it.
You actually have to zoom in your camera when standing in that room in order to see it. But
or free cam it like I did.
Shout out Maud Blackwitch. Shout out to whoever. I mean, she is the environment artist. If she stuck that in there just as an Easter egg, kudos.
I love it.
Big fan.
Yeah.
Big fan.
All right.
But lovely. Let's talk about...
Do we go to Eterna next, or do you want to talk about the ward placement? Because I know that was something that tripped you up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a pair of wards you have to activate, and they're kind of hidden.
Yeah.
Moving on.
On the left and right. Okay. Eterna Ritual Leader. This is a fun boss fight in that if you are doing it improperly with your group, you can lock a group member out behind the barrier.
Oh, that's also true. Thankfully, we'd never do that.
No.
But that portal is gigantic. I could very easily see somebody misclicking it. And
on
like
it, yep.
With all the ads still in the room. She
Yep, I did that.
Oh,
she's cheesable. I'm proud of you. You're doing good work, son.
It wasn't my finest moment.
No, for anybody who's not done this yet, or for anybody who hasn't figured it out, she's incredibly cheesable. If you stand adjacent to the barrier, like right against the barrier where you come
in the middle,
only one trap will spawn there. So you just blow up that trap, and then you don't have to move, or dodge, or deal with any of the chaos.
And then she has an attack that will put a little progress bar above your head. When that ticks off, you'll get smoked. So just move that off to a corner, and then DPS are down, really. So
yeah, her and the demons.
Yeah. And with this...
That's exactly what I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Stand up next to the barrier.
And we're going through this very quickly, and the thing I want to make abundantly clear through this is that we thought that the Archglacier was one of the most accessible bosses that they added to the game. I feel like this Elite Dungeon also ticks that box very well.
Well, in terms of scaling?
In terms of scaling from the story mode all the way up to the very top end.
Yeah. I mean, if you get a nice sliver drop out of story mode, you're still in the money.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Then in here is also where you perform the Red Wedding. I didn't get any screenshots of that. Did you?
No. Oh, you didn't? I thought you would have for sure. Yeah, I married Shane and Earth. Mostly because I was the one that had a completed Zamorak book. Ha-ha!
He didn't want to be a willing participant.
I was, and it was definitely... I mean, I was a willing officiant.
Earth wasn't the willing one.
But no, you get there's a ton of rune score on offer for the achievements for this place.
Oh, yeah.
Outside of even the kill counter achievements, just the dungeon achievements, it's a couple hundred. It's nothing to be shouted at, and you can just do it in a normal mode run in like an hour and a half, 2 hours. Kill all the mini-bosses. A couple of the mini-bosses have to be killed with a specific familiar, those kind of things. You need a couple of random items, like you need to have, I think, mid to high 30s archaeology or low 40s to get the demon mask.
Yeah.
But,
And the fun part about this is again, delivering those full updates, everything from the environment to the mechanics behind it to the achievements and the music as well. I mean,
music was good.
The RuneScape weddings have always been a meme, of course, and here they are. They're making an achievement out of it. You mentioned the ones, of course, where you have to have certain familiars summoned, like the Water Fiend and Hellhound and such. and also the Infernal Sauce. I made that. It doesn't do anything.
Hey, it doesn't do anything that we've found yet. I kind of hope that they make that the start of another trading sequence.
Yeah, that'd be neat.
Hot sauce recipe. Yeah.
666 fire runes, 12 lava runes, red spice, yellow spice, orange spice, brown spice, 3 tomatoes, 4 onions, and a bottle of red hot sauce.
I'd need to do Evil Dave's Big Day Out on my main to be able to do that.
Oh, you haven't done
that? I've done it on the
it's
iron.
It's a lot of magic. It's an oddly large amount of magic experience.
Yeah.
For a quest. But also, yes, being able to freehand capture rats is very helpful.
Yep. great achievements and such. And then we come after that, after Eterna, the ritual leader. And I thought we were required to kill the next boss, the denizen of Infernus.
Here's the thing. Apparently, according to Varys, was saying you don't actually have to kill the demon. If you kill all 6 of the witches that are on the outside, the barrier will just open, which makes sense in terms of like everything else in the dungeon. The barriers are tied to adds, so that makes sense.
Yeah.
The thing worth noting with this, though, is that if you attack the demon, you don't aggro the witches, and the demon does significantly less damage than the witches and is just a health point hit sack. So you just don't use any supplies. If you've already regeared in the chapel, you can kill the demon and not have to regear afterwards again, because those witches kind of can slap.
So if I'm going with a group, like before I got the 25 kill count, we would kill the witches because it's much faster, saving it once time. But when I was soloing, I didn't really care enough, so I would actually like twice, I think. I seriously just put the sunshine down and then put my game on Revo and walked away for a minute. Came back, he was dead.
That's and so were all the witches.
He does with Crypt Bloom and everything. Like, I was fine.
No, I mean, you could do that with even, like, Serenic on. We were doing it in Serenic and
Master. Yeah, I believe that.
Like, it's, Soul Split with a bow. And I think we both used the Jass arrows as a switch during the Undercity.
Yeah.
Had some fun trying those out. They do damage.
Yeah. They don't work against Zamorak, because he's not demon type.
He's Majorat, but we'll talk about. I upgraded my Hex Hunter bow. We'll talk about that later.
Ooh.
But I'm running around with a tier 103 with 30% extra damage, and that thing, like, as ranged weapons go, that it chonked pretty good. An SGB spec on top of one of those larger demons with that would hit easily. Just every one of the bolts that would hit is just its 10k.
Oh my god!
Just, even outside of Death Swift, it was gross.
Oh right, because your bow is EOF'd.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot about that.
So I can EOF on a tier 103.5, which is
wow.
But yeah, we'll talk about those kind of rewards. Yeah, and stuff later. But it's worth noting it's a good you can blow stuff up.
Yeah, so those are the two mini bosses that you need to kill. We initially thought it was 3, but I mean, we'll just say that you have a fun time killing the denizen of Infernus, because killing mini bosses in this dungeon does have a chance to drop the slivers and titles, of course,
slivers
which
titles,
are
we should have checked some of the chests if we could have for a couple of those mini bosses, like save the mini bosses and then empty out the chests, and like just gone and done a mini boss rush, because we left a lot of them for a couple of our runs.
Yeah.
We should have just seen what killing 4 or 5 mini bosses drops for loot. We don't know if their loot table is incredibly spectacular or not. We imagine it is. But,
we should do that. I'd like to get another run in before the weekend is up on free.
Yeah, I know you wanted to get an extra one for your to have a recording that was set up correctly. So.
Yep,
we'll do
correctly,
it. For sure.
So,
and I want to do a story mode run just for kicks and giggles, because I've only done normal.
Yeah, I should. and see, that's the thing. We were going to get Tanis involved on that, but he had to prepare for his concert and such. And no, he's not performing. Yeah. He's actually going to go see one. If he were performing, that would have been something
musical tennis.
But it'd be fun to rope him into that too. Because one thing we're not able to talk about is how, because it was very red, right? And how that would work.
So well, it's red and black and purple, and there's some blue in the Infernus sections.
Yeah.
So I don't know how much that's gonna work. How well that would work for him? I know he's. Red, I know, doesn't show up incredibly well for a lot of colorblind people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not just red-green, but like red as a grayscale is not a great color. So,
All right, yeah. Should we move on to the big boy himself?
Yeah, let's before talk to some of the mechanics.
Do that,
go ahead, Bears.
Before we do that, did we mention how if you run through the dungeon 25 times, you don't need to do it anymore?
Oh yeah, that's a good mention.
I think we did. So, like, we'll state it again.
If your group leader in particular, the leader of a group, or you if you're soloing, have killed the boss 25 times, have 25 kill count in any variety, you no longer have to do the dungeon. So basically, you make a friend that's got 26 kill count, and then you carry them to 51 kill count, and then you no longer need to do the dungeon.
No.
It's great.
You need to actually run through the dungeon 25 times.
Oh, it actually does track
So if I took you, since I have the 25 now, if I took you, you would not get credit for that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, like I say, I don't personally mind it. I like the extra ad clear. I don't mind the Akka puzzle, those kind of things. But, yeah, interesting.
So
that's good to know.
One thing I didn't mention is one thing I want to do when I get up to like 250%, which who knows how long that'll take, is I want to go back and actually do a dungeon run just to see how much everything scales up. Like,
well,
because
the demons
be
at the beginning, the demons at the end have twice as much health as the demons at the beginning. There's three kind of phases where they go, like on solo normal mode, they go from 100 to 150 to 200k for the final demons. The head, like, if you got five people and you're running at like a 500% team.
Oh, it would be insane.
It would take a while. But
yeah.
I wonder if the loot scales too. Like, I wonder if the loot
it
you get scales with your enrage. It does, yeah.
It
okay.
does. So I noticed when I was doing 90%.
I would be really curious. I would be really curious to see how much loot you get from a chest for doing the dungeon at 500% enrage.
And that's an interesting question. What about just doing the dungeon at 500% and not killing Zamorak at 500% if that was something? I mean, obviously, you get the big money items from Zamorak. But I feel like
I think those people probably have better things to do with their time.
Yeah.
If I had to guess.
It depends what changes. So, like, for example, that first barrier, when you're in normal mode, there's only four wizards there, right?
Yeah.
By the time I got
three
to
witches
100%,
and a maid,
there was six. Yeah, so there was six by the time I got there. So like just
well,
stuff
you
like
can
that
see,
changes, which I think is a cool mechanic.
They change the variety of NPCs even with the number of people. So like on solos, I believe that's just straight up four witches. With duos and trios, at least one or two of them was being turned into like a tier two witch. Like it was the one with the doubled health bar. In addition to having double health bar from being duo. I think... Unless I'm totally misremembering my solo, which I've only done the one, but yeah. It changes. It definitely changes. And so we'll see. We'll worth more investigation. But
I'll report back once I eventually get up that high.
Sounds good. And just for curiosity, what enrage are you at now?
140.
Okay. Okay. Good. And that's I think a good point at this point to move on to Zamorak himself. Does he have any nicknames?
Zammy. Same nickname he's had since 2001.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
If you call him Lord of Chaos, congratulations on your RP. I'm proud of you. Keep it going.
Yeah.
All the power to you.
All right, so we're not going to go through each and every one of the mechanics here because there's a list of that on the wiki. There's going to be guides that are going to be turning up telling you how to deal with each one.
Yeah.
So we're not going to go through too much of that. I think we mainly just wanted to start off by talking about the runes and hexes, right?
Zamorak has his standard mechanics, the mechanics that are present at all times throughout the fight, regardless of whatever else you do, very straightforward. He's got magic and range attacks for you to prayer flick if you want. I think we've both been just camping magic prayer because, again, filthy casuals taking it easy. But through the first majority of the fight, and especially below 100% enrage, it's just, you know, he has a melee push-ups he does. There's a couple of circles, one you need to stand in, one you need to kind of not stand on. You know, some stuff that is just very standard PVM. Stun him at this point, block some damage at this point with your favorite resonance, disruption shield, reflect, you name it. You can crystal shield, it all blocks it. Or shield dome, rather. Those kind of things. And then there's one mechanic that's unique, which probably should mention is he throws you into kind of like a Shadow Realm type situation in Infernus, where you have to kill some demons and match your symbol with another one of the edict symbols around the room to get out.
And if you don't match the symbol correctly, you die.
Yeah, it does just insta-kill you. or eliminate you, I think is the, what they've officially termed it for this one. Boss has too many insta-kills for them to throw up insta-kill overlays onto your character.
Yeah.
They just type an eliminated over you and call it done. It's hilarious.
Bye-bye.
With that said, though, the interesting part of this fight is that equally spaced throughout the fight, there are six sub-phases where you need to charge up the edicts of Guthix around the room. Each one of these edicts has a positive and negative effect, and the first one you activate will get an additional stack every time you activate an additional one. So the effects are relatively reasonably small, not they're impactful, but they're not huge at one or two stacks. But when you get up to like the last edicts where you've got four or five stacks on some of these, they significantly change the way the fight is done. So you can, by changing the order of the edicts, you change very much kind of the amount of damage you take. You change the kind of a number of unique mechanics about the fight, all of which are, pretty much all of which are actually new boss mechanics, I think.
Yeah, I think so. And the interesting part about this for me is that not only are they debuffs that hurt you, is that you can also choose to use them in a way to help yourself and buff yourself with this.
Right.
Which you and I haven't been doing that. We've just been focused on on hitting the ones that are going to be the most annoying and putting those later on in the cycle, like the execute one and such.
Yeah. So the PVME has a recommended order to this that I know, Bear, you said you've been following. Shane and I, hilariously, without looking up any of this stuff, just knowing what the effects of the edicts were, crafted an order that is almost exactly the opposite, a complete mirrored version of what the PVME is telling you. And part of that has to do with the last phase.
I can get into it later when we get into the last phase.
Oh, because
let's just talk through it, because we're talking
the
mechanics
at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So take him through our order.
Well, let's, Bears, talk through why the PVME has the opposite order, because that's a cool thing.
So, P7, which gets enacted at 100% enrage, brings you back to the realm area where you need to kill a demon, and then the six runes are out there, and you need to kill one rune per person in the group in an order that he gives you. And solo, you actually need to kill two. But you kill those two, and while you're killing them, he gains HP that will hit you. So if you kill it quickly, you'll maybe get hit for 20,000 damage. So before you get hit for that 20,000, you need to deal 100,000 damage. You have about three or four abilities, and you can extend that with the Vit Pot to maybe five or six abilities, and then you still will die after that. So the reason that gets changed is, as Thaxi was saying, each of these edicts give you a buff or a debuff. So that helps in PU1 through 6, but then P7, they get flipped. So, for example, the first edict, which is the one that I always go to first, makes Zami hit you twice, and it gives you extra adrenaline per attack that you deal. So you get that early on, and you get it up to 6 stacks. By the time, once you get to phase 7, it's down to 1 stack. And the edict that you charge the 6th now has 6 stacks. So you got to completely flip the order. So, for example, Thaxi was saying 5 and 3 are the two most annoying ones. No, sorry.
Or the easiest
six
ones,
and two
generally
are the most.
Speaking, yeah.
Yeah.
6 and 2, so 6 and 2 are the most last. Scary ones, yeah. So we've been doing
yeah,
this last.
Yeah, but you want to kind of do those. You want to do those more in the middle for mine because you don't want that negative impact in P7 as
right.
much.
Because we've been avoiding them. Edict 2 is a great example of this. Edict 2 is very powerful. Probably one of the most powerful things that they've ever introduced in the game, where it's the twin effects of this. The benefit is that your abilities come off cooldown 20% sooner per stack, which means that your abilities can be basically always up, which, especially when you've got, like Bears was saying, an extra adrenaline going on as well, that, like, having your abilities up all the time is massive. But the negative effect of Edict 2 is that you get executed if you fall below a certain health threshold per stack. And so if you have that at, like, 6 stacks, you can't fall below, like, 30% health. Which, since the boss has a number of mechanics that do large damage that you then have to heal back a resonance from, means that having high stacks of Edict 2 could be really dangerous. Conversely to that, like Bears is saying, you take massive damage in this Phase 7. So you want to have really low stacks, but the stacks flip. So if you did Edict 2 last, like Shane and I have been doing on our normal mode runs, but if you did that in P7, you'd then have 6 stacks of that. So you couldn't fall below 30% health, which is terrifying. So that's what Bears is saying. You probably want to do that closer to the middle, because it's a really powerful buff to have in the like fight phase. But then when you get to P7, you don't want that to be really high stacked. So it's a interesting kind of dynamic that they did with these positive and negative effects. And you can look those up and read them. We don't need to read them to you, but they've done really cool things, like giving you a ton of extra adrenaline, like doing these execute mechanics, right? They're having stuff that's hitting through prayer like Varric does partially, right? Or prayer and defensives. Like, they've got a number of these that are really unique effects, or getting adrenaline back after you ult. Like, it's stuff that is, like, usable and makes sense in our combat system, but is not been in any kind of boss mechanics before. So they just tucked a bunch of stuff in there. And they gave you the freedom to, like, play around with how powerful
you want each of those effects to be.
In effect,
it's making your own boss.
Kind of.
Yeah.
It's like Glacier, but everything kind of sucks.
Yeah. And for the record, the rune order we did was 5-3-4-1-6-2. You guys can look up what all those mean. And Bears, what's the PVME one you were doing?
Opposite.
I was doing 1-2-6-4-5-3.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
a little bit of jumbling, and
but I got used to it. Yeah.
Okay.
One last thing I want to mention on P7 is it's, I don't know how many people are around during Telos release, but P5 for Telos was the same sort of thing where, you know, no one really knew how to do it. Everyone kind of struggled. I know in the future P7 is going to be significantly easier. Like,
it
people
will be
find
solved,
a way to,
yeah.
We haven't gotten to that point yet, but
I've heard some really interesting things this week, because it's all about being able to do damage reduction while doing a ton of damage, right? And so
yes,
I've heard some really interesting things where, like, hellhounds are getting used because of the 20% damage reduction they offer
the whole week.
Yeah, you camp hellhounds for P7. Like, it's stuff that you never would have used before. By the way, hellhounds were like 120k each on Monday. If anybody saw that, you could make some hot GP.
So, but like,
and not only for this, but one of the achievements was there too in the dungeon.
Yeah, so I got that one on accident.
Oh yeah, you had to have a hellhound on. Yeah. Oh, you got lost and went and killed that mini boss.
No, I ran out of dungeoneering tokens. I'm like, I'll just kill some.
Oh, that's right. There's lucky. We should mention there's lucky charms for the dungeon. You can buy them at Brilthok's daughter at the Demon Hemorrhoid.
Which is interesting that we didn't mention that sooner, because that's something you and I have been forgetting.
Ironically, yes. wild.
Indeed. Anything else on the runes and hexes that you guys want to talk about in terms of how they've influenced the boss fight and such, or P7 bears?
No, I just really loved being on day one when everyone was trying to figure it out. Like,
you figured out what they did.
The first 100%, it really does not matter too much. I mean, you can see by how different our two rune routes are, is it does not matter. I was going starting at 1 and going all the way through 6. That was just my order for my first 100
didn't matter.
Or 90%. Yeah. So now that I have like a path, it'll be interesting to see how far that gets me before I need to change it up again.
Yeah, or if the meta for that will change. It's a really cool, unique boss mechanic that came off without a hitch. There were no glitches with it, given the number of unique things they added. Honestly, kudos to the devs and the QA team. They did really good work on it. It's super neat.
And that's another thing we need to talk about, is that there really hasn't been that many game-breaking things with this week, aside from a couple of little technical snafus, which are going to get patched probably next week or the week after.
There was one that messed with high scores a lot.
Oh, right. I remember that.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I am one of those people that is unfortunately still impacted, where every time I enter the dungeon, I have to change my draw distance to low. and then change it back after I get inside, which is incredibly frustrating.
I bet.
Because anytime I forget, my game just crashes and I have to reload it. If I'm group lead, then I'm leaving Shane just out there chilling. But they're aware of it. They mentioned it on Monday,
yep.
Right? Like, they acknowledged the bug. And so I'm sure they're working on a fix for it. It's just going through QA. It'll be out next week or 2 weeks from now. So, again, as MMOs go, so unbuggy, so pleased. Just good job.
Yeah, and
yeah,
I mean,
I agree.
And that's the thing. Until you play another MMO, you really don't realize how good you have it with RS.
They do good work for us.
Yeah. All right. So before we talk about the drops and the rewards, which I'm sure everybody wants to hear about, I'm going to thank some Patreon supporters for this week because, of course, it is up to them that we do everything that we do here at RSVNB Update, and they have just been a wonderful group that allowed us to do our last week's monthly bit, which was the boss tier list, moving from S to D, a number of bosses down there on that list. I'm not going to go too much into who landed at what tier, but your usual suspects are up at S, and we do have some surprising ones in the mid-tier and such, so Patreon supporters have full access to that, but in particular this week, I'd like to thank Alaska, Amos Reed, Anatoly D, Andrew C, Arvids L, Big Huge Rat, Bryflex, Chunk the Monk, Diana, Drama Free, Duramax, Elomady, Flazaman, Free Milk, G Hammy, Gila Fleur, Jade Gizmo, Jason S, Jeebus, Jesse W, Jim M, Ling 01, Lucky Ducky, Malinork, Mohan V, Nate the Great, Nick G, OTR Gamer, Patty the Architect, Pernasius, Ricky A, Samuel FL, Skiotan, Seth W, Stubby, Tabby, Tanner JW, The Naked Captain, Tim A, Tom V, and Zant. Thank you, everybody, for your support. It truly means the world to us. And if you want to learn more about this, you can check us out at patreon.com/RSBNB, where we offer 3 tiers of support starting at $1 a month. You gain access to that entire back catalog of monthly bits, including, of course, the one I just mentioned on the PVM tier list. Wonderful episode. And 47 other monthly bits going back to 3+ years at that point with that. So really good value on that. We also have a $3 a month tier where you get a special VIP rank on the Discord, including chat channel access and a mention to the podcast at the start of the month, and high quality stereo versions of the show. And if you want to give the ultimate gift, we have the RSBNB Update Insider tier where you'll receive a shout out on the podcast each and every week and gain exclusive access to the outtakes we use to make the clip show at the end of the year in addition to everything else. So thank you, everybody, for your support. It truly means the world to us, and we wouldn't be doing this without you guys, so thanks a lot.
Thank you.
I'll double plug
that tier list. We did not, for the record, rate them based on difficulty. No. We rated them based off of how well we thought they met their design goals and were stood up in terms of current day for profitability and just mechanics. So not a standard tier list.
No, not your standard tier list.
But
there will be at some point in the future another Patreon exclusive feature that I pulled this week.
Yes, indeed.
We were thinking initially roundtable, but I have been pushed into the point where it's been suggested that we do a Patreon independent session where we go through my bank, because
Shane. It's so
bad. Can we do
that
for mine too, please?
This man has Barrow's armor that he used in 2007 in his bank. It's organized.
Is it like, at least in an organized? Oh, see, mine's
kind
not
of,
organized.
Kind of, but it's like, there's just so much in there that we look at and we're like, Shane, this is useless. Like, I get some of these are like temperamental, whatever, but, or, man, I can't even speak. His bank is bad. How he doesn't have a full bank, I have no idea.
Now, you never know what sort of items might come out in the next thing that you might be needed, you know? Like, we'll get into it in the next little bit, but
no.
I gotta spoil it.
Some of this, you definitely don't need.
Well, give them an example. What are you thinking about?
Well, so, for example, I used to train agility, or invention, with my staff of lights. So I had 10 just in my bank, right? They were about, I was on them for maybe 2 mil or so. Monday for 30 mil each.
Like, we're going to talk about that. But we're going to talk about the stabs.
I want a taxi to give an example of my bank.
I mean, Shane, your entire last tab is Arc Seeds.
Yeah, that's a bit rough. You're not going to need those.
I just don't. I mean, I got my farming pet off of the Arc Seeds. Like, I can't hate. But at the same time, buddy, elsewhere. I mean, they could separate entirely from your entirely seed other tab. Which, again, the man loves farming. This is not incredibly surprising to me. And that's actually not the worst part of the bank. There's a lot of old quest items that are literally useless. Like, they don't have a purpose anymore.
There's like an option to filter by useless items, too.
Oh, I'm sure there is. Yeah, and
It says none of them are useless.
There's only a set number of those items that show up on this
and list. And for clarification to the Patreon supporters, Earth will also be there, and in the Discord he said, quote, "I will be having a drink beforehand, and I am insisting it be delivered uncensored."
There will be flagrant profanity involved in this adventure. By both Reed and myself.
In any case, Patreon supporters can look forward to that as a little special thing sometime this month or next month. But, okay. Staffs of Light. I simply want to start with the enchantments.
So before we dive into the enchantments, some of the enchantments include a stat that we've only seen in one or two other places before, and that stat is critical damage. So let's have a chance to talk about both critical chance and critical damage. This is a taxi side note. Patent it. Trademark it. Whatever.
A mini micro lesson.
If you will. The things to note here is that, like, well, let's start with critical chance, right? Critical chance, we've talked about this before in the show. My understanding of critical chance is that critical chance is a forced critical chance. It is separate and calculated separately from your base 5% chance to crit something. If you have any extra critical chance that is standalone on itself, that critical chance forces a critical. So it will take whatever damage you would have hit, bump it up to somewhere in the 95 to 100% range, and then add the 20% crit modifier on top of it. Most abilities don't scale all the way down to doing zero damage, so 60% of max damage is about where the average hit is for most abilities. So we're going from there to 120. That effectively means every time you hit a forced critical, you do double damage. And it's not true for every ability. Abilities have a wider range of damages than that. But generally speaking, you can consider 1% crit chance is 1% chance to crit, 1% chance to do double damage. Every percent crit chance is therefore 1% of damage. Crit chance is a very valuable stat, given that, like, a tier 92 to it from a tier 90 is 2% damage, same as getting a tier 99 prayer, right? Like, we'll spend a lot of money in endgame to get a 2% buff, and you can get that from a single rank of the biting perk. In terms of sources of critical damage, right, the biting perk, the new rings, and the grimoire are kind of the big sources. You don't have a whole lot of other options for it. So, hard stat to get a hold of, very valuable. The new thing that is being introduced to a large degree is critical damage modifiers. Critical damage is an interesting stat because it looks good, and it's often displayed alongside critical chance, especially with these rings. The thing to note about this is that critical damage only applies on critical hits. So if you're assuming, if you're running like Biting 2, and you don't have one of the special rings on, like you're running a Ring of Death or something, you were sitting at like a 9% crit chance even with the base crit. And so the chance of, like, you only get 3% extra damage, but you only get it 9% of the time. It's really not worth it. If you're running Biting 4 and one of these new rings, you're probably sitting around 20% crit chance. From those standpoints, you get 20% of the time you get that 3% benefit. With a Grimoire active, that jumps up to about 33%. Now, it's worth noting that because you're doing effectively double damage, the critical damage modifiers do have double effectiveness, right? So instead of doing 200% damage, you're now doing 206, right, if you have 3% crit. Because that extra 3% crit will also be doubled from what your expected value of your ability is. It's a lot of weird, complicated math. What I'm effectively saying is that take whatever your critical chance is, including base crit, multiply that by 2 and then divide by 100, and that's the effective amount you get per percent of critical damage.
I feel like we need to whiteboard that to visualize it. Can you say that again?
We'll make it, the TLDR, the too long zoned out, which,
right.
Sorry.
No, it's
too
fine.
The effective version of this is if you are running a reasonably well-optimized endgame PVM setup without a grimoire, you get about 0.4% damage per point of critical damage. So 3% critical damage is a 1.2% increase in your damage output. If you're running a grimoire with that setup, you get 0.66-ish percent damage per point of critical damage. Which is like full, I'm tryharding. It becomes better. So in those situations where you're hitting that 33 or plus percent critical damage, or critical chance, your critical damage then becomes, from a 3% crit damage on a ring, that 3% crit damage becomes the equivalent of about 2% extra damage overall, right? With a grimoire, it becomes much more valuable. So that's like the caveat to how we think about crit damage, is that crit chance is a really valuable stat. It's like a 1-to-1, you get this much damage. Crit damage is a much less valuable stat.
I think that's on average
half as valuable, but that's a very gross estimation.
And I think that's the important thing of why we're doing this, is because we're going to be talking a lot about critical strike damage in the next three rewards.
Right. So the next thing is, so the first kind of rewards on the chopping block is that there's 9 enchantments which increase the power of pre-existing items.
And I just want to say, people who have been keeping up with their demon farming, the daily demon farms and the daily rerolls, they're going to have an advantage to this, and I kind of wish I was doing that leading in.
Yeah, one of these sets, there's one for each style of the weapons that give you more damage when you're using them against the correct combat triangle.
Yeah.
There's the Rex Matriarch ring for each style, and there's the like ability altering gloves for each style. Each have an enchantment. And the ring enchantments, because we just talked about critical damage enchants, we'll start there. Because these got one of the biggest like pieces of love from these enchantments. And the rings, I believe, it's either 8 or 10 slivers apiece.
I believe it's 10.
It's 10 for the rings. Okay.
Yeah, 10 for the rings.
It's 8 for the gloves, and then 15 for the weapons. Okay. So, 10 for the glove, for the rings. The rings... Some of the rings are bigger winners than others. Our base comparison is going to be 5% damage output from ring. That's your Berserker ring, your Reaver's ring. The typeless one that drops your accuracy by 5% gives you 5% crit chance.
And that one didn't get a enchantment this week, did it?
It did not. No.
No.
It's already powerful enough. Yeah. It's worth noting, it is still the highest source of critical chance of any of these. So if you're optimizing for critical chance, right, if you're running a fractured staff, if you're running death spore arrows, it is still the best option. But what they've done, and we'll start with the champion's ring, because that's the melee ring, and it got the biggest glow up from all of these. It gained, when you have the enchantment on it, it gained 1% critical chance, so from 3 to 4, on a bleeding target, which your target is now always bleeding because Abyssal Flesh exists, you get 4%, so you're 1% critical damage less, so you have 1% damage to make up with the ring. The additional bonus to this is you get 1.5% critical strike damage for each bleed on your target, which effectively means as long as you have at least one bleed, you're probably close to breaking even, and if you have two or more bleeds going, which for melee, a lot of the time you will... That's gravy. So
that feels very powerful.
Without losing the 5% accuracy. It's great. So the champion's ring before, 3% crit damage, was never the best choice for melee. There just wasn't a situation where you needed that accuracy, where it was just a better choice than the other ring.
Yeah.
So with this change, I think the champion's ring is almost better everywhere. So big, big glow up for the champion's ring. Those warrior's rings off the DKs are now worth... They were worth trash, and they should be worth something now.
And I absolutely think they needed to do this, because if we go back to our PVM meta review episode from last year, when it came to Reaver's Ring, it was Reaver's Ring or the Challenge Ring, basically.
Right.
Unless you were using a bow, which even then, niche.
If you're using a bow, niche. Worth noting, too, that each of these ring enchantments requires a pair of automaton gloves. So the automaton gloves, which had now been outshone entirely
also,
by everything.
Also scrimshaws.
Yes. And scrimshaws. So a little bit extra money for which the poor people because scrimshaws got pushed out by the new books.
Exactly. And with
so
all the
good balance.
And I think when scrimshaws also really went down was when they did those ports weekends a couple Christmases ago and flooded the market with all those bones and such.
Yeah.
So
they
maybe
always recovered.
Bring it
they
back
always
up.
Recovered though.
Yeah.
They always recovered. So we'll see where this falls. The problem with these enchantments is they're a single time consumable per account.
Yeah.
And so there will be an initial uptick in terms of the number of things that are being consumed,
right.
But after that it will... It is an extra source pulling them out of the economy, right?
And
so
we are talking
not a ton
also,
of people do automaton, so...
We are also talking about endgame rings here, too, so...
Yes, absolutely.
So just keep that in mind.
These are relatively expensive rings and will continue to be. I don't think that's going to change because of this.
No.
So that's the melee ring. Melee ring does that. I actually want to talk about the range ring next.
Okay.
Because it's a parallel where it's you get 1% extra critical chance when it's active. So 4%
only
crit
when
chance
using
total,
a bow.
But they well, that's the thing with the ring, right?
Yeah.
When using a bow. And they added a 3% crit strike damage to it, which again, generally speaking, should break even and do slightly better, and also compensate for your accuracy. Or not have you compensate for accuracy. So if you're using bow, the Stalker's Ring is now best in slot. That's just, I think I can say that pretty unequivocally. Same thing with melee. Generally speaking, melee, you're better off with the Champion's Ring, unless you are in a situation where you really want to optimize. So if you're using your bow, it may be better for you to still be on Reavers if you're using a Death Spore rotation, which we'll talk about that when we get to the new bow. Death Spore's got a bit of a blow up there, kind of. the last ring is the Ring of Metaphysics, and this is the change to the Channeler's Ring. They added 2.5 crit strike damage based on the for every hit of a channeled ability that you do. So 2.5 base plus 2.5 on additional for 5% on crit.
Doesn't Tendrils
hit
do something absurd like 5 hits or something?
Tendrils does 5. The Armadale Battlestaff does 4. G-Konk does 3.
Okay.
And this is on top of it already giving a number of critical... It had a critical strike chance bonus that was based on the hit. Now it has a critical strike damage bonus based on the number of hits as well.
I'm sorry, I just have to laugh at this. They bring out a tier 95 bow.
Yeah.
Magic is still going to be top damage dealer
yeah, no,
at the end of the
this
day
is this. This is the only real buff to Magic. This
yeah,
and kind of the gloves.
True.
The gloves are pretty small.
And Magic's in a good spot, too. It didn't really need it.
Well, and we'll get to the bow.
Yeah. Yeah.
The bow's interesting. The bow's going to need to get changed, I think. but, again, Magic is good. It is probably still only a switch. You probably want the Reaver's Ring on most of the time with your Armadale, with your Fractured Staff. Unless you're using an Armadale special or maybe Tendrils, but Tendrils is kind of sketchy to begin with. So I think you just switch to this when you're about to spec, and then you switch back to Reavers, because Reavers has so much value for all of your basics and a lot of your, like, other abilities. yeah.
So I did buy this. I've tried it, camping it. I haven't noticed any difference. It feels pretty similar to... Yeah. Reaver's Ring, like, you get less crits, but the crits deal more damage, so it's kind of more dependent. I've gotten faster kills with it, I've gotten much slower kills with it. So.
Well, it gives, I mean, the ring gives a flat 4% crit chance, I believe, per hit of your... So if you use it only for, what should I call it? If you use the ring only for your channel abilities, like, that ring can, it's the only way in the game to, like, break 50% crit chance. And that crit chance applies globally to your character while those hits are being fired. So for the next several ticks, any Armadale battle or any Armadale Fractured Staff of Armadale autos that get fired off also have that crit chance. So that elevated crit chance hits on more attacks than that, is if I understand how that works correctly.
Yeah.
So it's a good buff.
Yeah.
It's a powerful buff, but it's the only buff to Magic this patch. So
like I sit here and I want to save for the best in slot Magic setup now. Like I don't think I need that kind of power, but I feel like that's
a lot of fun.
I should go.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. I mean, the deal with the ring, if you really want to optimize, it should be a switch. If you don't want to optimize, it's a great camp. The ring is now a good camp. I might camp that instead of Reavers now.
It's
good enough, yeah, exactly.
Either or.
Anything else on the rings?
No, we should move on. We're going to lump the next three together. The next three are the Teemal, Inkstaff, and Hexbow. They gained 5% additional damage boosting effect, which jumps them from 12.5% above their tier 80 damage threshold up to a 17.5% above their tier 80 damage threshold. It's worth noting that that is multiplicative by the tooltip. It's multiplicative off your total ability damage. So it's not just the weapon damage ability damage. It actually also includes the amount of ability damage that is from, like, your power armor and from your skills, like your level 99 range, whatever. So with that said, assuming 99 range, tier 92 armor, all of that, like, your gear is leveled and everything, this is the equivalent, or even actually without that, if you just look at the damage that this gives, the damage bonus over a... in comparison to tiers, when you look at the... If you add 17.5% on top of the damage that you get when you wear these things, you end up with a tier 103.5 or 103.45 lots of decimals.
I have one question with this. Yesterday. And I mean, it's a very simple effect on paper. It just amps that damage up. And my question is this going to move any of these three weapons, the Pterosaur Maul, the Inquisitor's Staff, or the Hexbow, into something where you absolutely want to be using it for a certain class of NPC?
No, I mean, so the deal is it's just extra damage, right?
Yeah.
And it's like 5 to 10 tiers of extra damage. It's 5 to 7% probably extra damage over using like a tier 92, 95. If you can fire something out of one of these abilities, right? If you can fire a melee bleed out of the T-Mall, if you can fire like those fatty things out of these...
Like we were talking about the SGB spec earlier.
You should try to do so, but most of the other styles have something else that you want instead, right? Like you either want access to G-Conk, you want access to the Fasoa spec, you want access to the passive on the new tier 95 bow, you want access to the passive on, like, if you're firing off bleeds, you want access to the spear, right? So like these are niche in terms of like best in slot and bumping the meta and bumping potential DPS, yes, but you got to be really trying to work this into your rotation to make these even vaguely required or usable. I mean, they're good on their own. The weapons are now powerful. They went from tier 97 to tier 103, right? That's great. But just in terms of, like, are they required anywhere, or are they, like, going to be meta anywhere? Probably not. I mean, if that's your weapon, like, I've been running with the Hexbow through the dungeons, and, like, using Joss arrows on a demon out of a tier 103, like, I'm doing, like, tier 130, 140 damage with a SGB spec out of an EOF, right? Like, it's disgusting how much damage I can pump out.
Yeah. Interestingly, also, to note on these enchantments, the one for the Hexbow uses Serenic Scales and Chaos Stars. The one for the Inquisitors uses Onyx and a Necromantic Focus, which is an archaeology relic. And the one for
They all require an archaeology relic.
Uses the Cleaver Sword and Glorious Bars.
Effectively, they require some, like, creation ingredient for that style and an archaeology relic, or in the case of Magic, some Onyx.
And I think this is also what people have been asking for from PVM, is the ability to upgrade their gear with other skill
to keep up. To keep up, yeah. I mean, generally good. The balance on these is fine.
It's perfect that these also drop from the regular dungeon.
Yes, yeah. The only one of these I have opinions about is coming up, in terms of the recipe to make it. All of these, I think, are fine and reasonable, with one exception. And we'll talk about that next.
So there's nothing we need to say more on that. So that the next one we're going to be talking about moving and upgrading the enhanced Carapax wrist wraps, enhanced Nightmare Gauntlets, and enhanced Gloves of Passage.
Yeah, worth noting, I don't know if these apply to the unenhanced version. I probably should have just checked. I have the unenhanced version.
I don't believe they do.
Yeah, so this does, in addition, add value to the Leng artifacts dropping from the Art Glacier, which is good because they were dropping... They were hovering around 25, but they feel bad when the alternative is a core. So having a little extra value to that, I think, is good.
Which one do you want to start with?
I mean, it doesn't particularly matter. Let's start with the magic gloves. Plus 15% combust damage. Which, again, when you use the glove effect, you can't walk the boss, so it's still less combust damage than you would get if you didn't use the effect, and could walk the target. You can do some funky things by having the boss walking and then applying your combust. I think there's some funky business there, but 15% combust damage, it's fine. My issue, this is the one that I have an issue with the rest
of the Illyjonkin components.
Yeah, there's 6 of the Dark Components and 2 Staves of Light. Now, the Staff of Light before was gaining some value because it was an interesting EOF option, because the Staff of Light spec massively decreases, it halves your melee damage incoming, and it is pre-mitigation halving, I believe.
Yeah.
For a minute, as long as, and the caveat with the staff was always, yeah, it's a tier 75 staff, you have to keep the staff on for the spec to work. In an EOF, you don't have to keep the staff on. You could just use it with anything. You could switch whatever gear you wanted to have. You just had to stay on a magic style. So massive damage reduction. Really helpful that people were solo tanking Beastmaster with this. So it was drawing the price up a little bit, which is why they're not 2 mil anymore. You see like 3 mil or 4 mil right there.
Bears, you said you sold for 30?
Yes, I sold 6 of them for 30 mil yesterday, or Monday, Tuesday.
So this week, it's the other upgrade to magic, which is, to be fair, very niche. It's not niche, but it's a very marginal update to magic damage. But it's really, really expensive. The rest of these could fall to be worth nothing. Yep. And this enchantment would still be worth something because the components needed to make it are ridiculous.
Yep.
So I have opinions about that.
Okay.
I think there's a lot less Staves of Light coming into the game, too, because there are a lot of the... public block lists. They're on. People don't like to do them for whatever reason. They're great.
Where do they
SP
come
the
from, even?
Ice Strike Worms. So they require 92 Slayer, and a lot of people at that point are doing other. You know, so yeah. I don't. I'm assuming
and
a lot of UK
a fire
assigns
cape.
Them. Okay, yeah, but like that's.
The Zuck Cage count for that now.
You have to have it unlocked. Yes, they do count.
I thought. Didn't you need to bring it with you? Because
no,
I remember the first
so,
time
they
I
made
went.
It so you could have it in your bank. I believe.
Okay.
No, they did not. Right. That is available for 2,000 Slayer reward points. You can purchase the ability to not have to wear a cape.
Okay.
Gotcha, yeah.
Otherwise, you cannot get
the
task
if
you have one. Right. So, I mean, but you do, if you're using fire spells, you do double damage to these, and you do get full XP for that damage. So, they not as good once they rebalance the way that Slayer XP worked, but... EOC pre-things, there was really good damage output, really good XP rates from these because you did that extra damage. But, again, currently, not a lot of them coming into game, and I'm a little worried about the price of this enchantment in particular.
Yeah.
As a buff, it's fine. It's a magic buff.
It does what
it's
says it's going to do
it's
on the tin.
Nominal. Yep.
I've only found it being useful a couple places. There's, like, one doorway in the dungeon where there's just one enemy, and I just... When he starts walking towards me, I'd throw a bleed on him and then
combust him.
And it you know, it was hitting like 15K or so, which seemed like a lot for two basics.
Which, like, it's worth noting that you cannot hit cap with these. That is a true plus 15% because it is calculated on bleed damage, which one doesn't multiply with a lot of things, and two, the bleed hits are still individual bleed hits. They just happen all at the same time with the gloves, so... It's fine. Again, I don't want to spend too much time on it.
Right.
It's a nominal boost. It's just really expensive. Questionable rescue.
Yeah.
All
right. I just had most of that stuff laying around.
Yeah.
Let's do the ranged one next, then.
We'll do the ranged one next. The ranged one is also a nominal buff. Very much Honestly, I don't think you'll notice this anywhere. Snipe fires a second bolt if target is facing away. That's useful if you start a Slayer mob kill with it, so that the mob might be facing away from you, or for raids, where you've got a base tank holding it off opposite from you.
That's the exactly other place where you've got a base tank. I thought of.
Yeah. Like the other big group bosses where you have a base tank, or like things like AOD, you're circled around the boss by requirement of mechanics. Same thing with Virago, oftentimes. So you might be able to use it to Virago, but then you're ranging Virago, which is
wouldn't
a choice
that you
made. Wouldn't
it be interesting if this was the beginning of a flanking playstyle in RS?
It would be, but the problem is, and this is some of the first time that RuneScape has flanking as a mechanic, but because it's some of the first time, it's really, really, really hard to flank in RuneScape. Nothing lives long enough, and if it does live long enough, there's mechanics that make you be in front of it anyways.
Some of the flanking angles, too, are really strange. Like Solak,
true.
You could be looking straight at Solak, and you get the flanking symbol as if you could flank. So
with
I
the
don't
flanking.
Think I'm behind
That's true.
Him.
We do have the flanking perk, so we know that, like, some things like with the Solak core, you could, like,
it's a bit iffy, yeah.
If you can use it, cool. If not, pretty much everywhere, it's fine. It's not, I don't think it's actually buff. I have the upgraded gloves, and I'm probably not going to buy that enchantment until it's less than 10 mil.
Yeah, I don't think it's worth it.
It needs shifting components and dark bows.
Which,
not a big deal on either case. Yeah.
Maybe that's why Dark Bow was up this week when I was trying to put it back in my EOF.
Probably. But again, it's just not useful.
No.
Yeah.
So, you know, if it was had a wider use case, maybe, but like it's nominal damage in nominal places for expensive, so whatever. Later. The last enchantment, we're on to 9 already. Okay, we need to get the move on. The melee enchantment, the enchantment of agony. This is actually really nice. This is like the one of these that is that of all the things they did range good with a new bow. They did melee good with the robes in this and ability. Like melee got a big old glow up from their ring. Everything they did for melee is on point, I think, in terms of at least being seen as relatively powerful. After using Smash or Havoc, the base version of these gloves will give you 10% extra damage on your next attack or next hit of a channeled ability, and will give you 20% extra bleed damage. So it really makes your bleeds hurt significantly more. So basically, Smash and Havoc have a 10-second cooldown, and it makes them let bleeds do more damage for 10 seconds. Anytime Smash or Havoc is on cooldown, you get extra bleed damage. These gloves increase that bleed damage from 20 to 25%, and increase that damage on next attack from 10 to 16%.
So you're really going to want this one then?
Assuming you're using this every fifth or sixth ability, you're prioritizing Smash or Havoc, which you probably should be given where melee is right now. These will do significant, like you will get, you know, 1 to 2% extra damage just from the first part of the passive, and maybe 0.5% or a little less from the second part. This is a significant buff. I mean, you won't probably feel it, but it is noticeable power creep on the scale that is RuneScape noticeable.
Yeah, and that, I think...
Well designed.
And I think with that catapults us into the next thing that we wanted to talk about was just all the general melee buffs that came with... Or do we want to talk about that or the codices first? I feel like we can get the codices done for Greater Sunshine and Greater Death Swiftness very quickly.
I think we might have differing opinions on these, though. So this could be interesting.
They made Planet Feet a passive that costs a bunch of Saber components to unlock, and a drop, and they allowed it to keep the damage over time as a result of that.
Yeah,
that's.
I don't think it's worth it.
Oh god, it's so expensive, and it's not a damage buff.
Exactly.
No, it's totally totally quality of life for rich people.
I'm not going to be.
I'm not paying that.
I'm not going to be changing out to a greater Death Swiftness. If the price comes down when I build a magic setup, I might look into Greater Sunshine. But I have worked that Planted Feet switch into my rotations.
It's a once-a-minute switch. If they wanted to get rid of Switchscape, I mean, it saves. So the thing that this does do, which is like we can't overstate. True endgame RuneScape right now is a lot of switches. There's a lot of things in your inventory. being able to bring one extra food sometimes is a significant portion of extra food for people. And for those people, they have the money to afford the upgraded codex and can use it. For everybody else, please continue to use Planet Feet. If you're not using it,
so,
it's the best perk, damage-wise. Please get it.
Shout out to the perks.
So the one argument that I like, or that makes me consider it, is greater tough swiftness. So let's say you're camping the new bow, right?
Yeah.
You have a two-hand weapon on, and you're... My Planet Feet is my defender. Right?
Mm.
So I'd have
my
to planet
feet
my
when I have a bow on,
and then switch
my
to my planet feet.
I switched to a dark bow. I just have a dark bow for my planet feet. I have two separate. I have a defender and a dark bow. Or I think it's actually on my strike bow on the main, but because I just don't use it as a whole, as an actual shield. But
so yeah, I mean, if you and then like my one friend, he has two quivers, two pernix quivers, one for bolts and one for arrows. So we'd have to switch main hand, offhand, and quiver to be able to do planet feet. So in that situation, right, that might be worth getting the greater depth swiftness.
Yeah. Again.
Not worth the money, though.
And no. That's just the thing. It's going to entirely depend on your setup and what you're comfortable with doing.
If they wanted to make this just an unlock from the mini quest, I'd have been okay with it. I'm not gonna lie to you.
Really?
I wouldn't have been mad. No, because then you have to have like, because that mini quest requires the full storyline.
Yeah.
Right. Like there, you can't skip anything to get there. So you have to do this full story arc to unlock that mini quest. If the mini quest just gave it to you, I wouldn't have been mad.
Right, but you still you're saying you'd still have to pay the Syra components, right?
Oh, that's true. It gave you the codex, and you then had to pay.
It's,
the sewer commanders are the trouble with that too, because you don't want to kill Hellwar.
No, yeah. It's 10 for the untradeable version and 20 for the tradable version.
Right, oof. And the codex, it should be noted, is not tradable on its own. The person that pays these is actually the person that receives the drop.
Which is a little bit backwards when you think about it. Maybe
it's a little unusual. Fine, on my end, I truly don't care. But, in terms of if you had to split a five-way codex, you would either have to have the things with you, or you'd have to, pre-buy and then level.
Oh.
Or just sink the cost, right?
Oh.
For the sewer components. So, you know, that... It's, I don't know how I feel with that necessarily. It's a choice they made. It is what it is.
Interesting.
But again,
interesting.
They're fine. Okay. The codexes are fine.
All right.
Let's talk about
the biggest departure in conventional MMO damage dealing classes that RuneScape has just pulled off.
Oh yeah.
Typically, in your classic MMO, the mage.
Oh, no. We got another codex. We got another codex. Don't you start on the robes yet?
Oh right, Chaos Roar. Sorry, I got a little excited there.
Clearly. Chaos Roar, it's a new ability. It doubles the damage of the next ability hit. Important. Not ability cast, ability hit. Right. So, that you use with a melee ability or a melee special attack. What that means is that the first hit of a channeled ability will be doubled, but not every hit of a channel, but every hit of a bleed will be, because bleed hits are based on the first hit of a bleed. What that means is that the Chaos Roar ability, incredibly strong with the exec kill, the Zuck Sword special attack will just be straight up doubled the entire thing, which is massive. It's it's tens of thousands of extra damage, without any shadow of a doubt. It works reasonably well with a walked slaughter. It could be niche with some ultimates. I don't know if I would want to use this with a destroy. Because, again, you start running into hit cap issues pretty quickly with that.
Right.
Yep. Doing this is something that Ana bleeds. For the people at the very high end, very valuable. For the people like Lucario, like the people with a lot of money, the exec kill swords in an EOF, like the whole nine yards, they're doing well with this. Everybody else, it's okay. It's fine. You just hit caps on everything. So it's hard to use effectively, where it wouldn't have just been better to use another ability in place of it.
I think the big thing with this is the 60-second cooldown. People were not expecting it to be that long.
Well, again, with the X8 Killsword, like, that is 14 hits, and the majority of those hits with this will hit cap. So that is 140,000 damage from a singular special hit, single global cooldown. Like, I mean, I guess with this, that means it's two global cooldowns, but...
It's basically RuneScape's Alpha Strike ability, meaning that if you want to hit really big and you're not on Berserk, this is an option.
But the deal with it is that it's not a hit really big. It doesn't double your hit cap. If it doubled your hit cap...
No.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
But it gives you one ability really that's doubled. Or sorry, one hit you, that's doubled.
Well,
minus the,
I mean, yes,
minus the
one hit, one
of
ability.
The bleed, right?
Right, yeah. So, it's in a really weird design space based on how hard melee is already hit capping. I mean, maybe it gives an extra niche use with the cold cuts, with the Leng swords from the Arclaysaur, that increasing the hit cap now has some increased damage for the next 15 seconds, has some extra utility, but, like, again, melee has just turned into a ridiculous switchscape, so here we are. It's fine. It exists. It's not overly powerful. I'm not upset about it.
No.
I mean, it is very powerful with an easy K. But it's cool. It's fine. I don't have a strong opinion on Chaos Roar. The design in it is interesting and new, and that's about all I can say for it.
Yeah.
Let's talk about...
And we'll have to see where everything, you know, settles down with that and...
Yeah.
In the interim with this. But this is what I was talking about, the melee robes that complete that move that in other MMOs you have here. Mages and such being typically the glass cannon in RuneScape.
Casters.
In RuneScape, of course. Mages are the tank. And here we have...
Anime Dead Goes Bert.
The melee class being our glass cannon with the Vestments of Havoc. Tier 95 armor. With a tier 100 damage bonus, but tier 75 armor only.
Yeah. I mean, the armor value isn't... Like, that is going to be noticeable, but that's not the end of the world.
No, it's not.
It means it makes melee a little more glass cannon, or the RuneScape equivalent of air quotes glass cannon. And melee is definitely putting out extra damage this patch. It's catching up with mage in a not-so-subtle kind of a way, which is good. Melee needed that buff. I mean... It's been hard to melee a lot of recent bosses. Melee's really been taking the shit out of the stick. Forgive my language, but it's, yeah. So it's good. And the robes, the passive effect on the robes is the big selling point. The tier 100 damage bonus is nice, but we've talked before about just the fact of wearing power armor. Like, tier 60 power armor has more than half the impact that this tier 100 power armor is going to have, right? Just changing from tank to power armor is a big deal. Upgrading your power armor 10 tiers? Not going to be... I mean, even 8 tiers in this case. It's a few extra damage, right? It's nominal.
Yeah.
It's nice, but it's nominal. The true benefit here is
the
in the 2, 3, and 4-piece set effects.
Yeah, so the 2-piece set, after casting an ultimate ability, regenerate 15% adrenaline over 18 seconds. If already active, instead regenerate 20% adrenaline instantly.
Right.
3-piece set, Berserk is extended by 6 seconds. 4-piece set, maximum adrenaline increased by 20%.
Yeah. So this is interesting, because the 4-piece set bonus to me doesn't seem worth using. You might, like, there might be some rotations where you niche switch to it in order to pop out a ton of burst damage really quickly. But the Jaws of the Abyss helm is so valuable for that ulti generation that I can't see the helm on this being used. Like, not meta-wise, right? Like, if somebody owns one, it's going to be a cheap, powerful melee helm, right? Like, if the endgame people aren't buying the helms, they're buying the other pieces, then the helm on this is going to be used. Like, they're still going to be dropping. They're going to be around. They're worth using if that's what you got. But the Jaws of the Abyss is so good. And the thing with this is that the 2-piece bonus is the biggest part of it.
Yeah, which is
because
easy
what you
to
can,
pick.
What you can do with this is you can it opens up a number of rotations, such as a natural instinct, where you natural instinct, and then that allows you to build back to 100% really quickly. So you get two or three of these, like you can natural instinct, and then go straight into Berserk, and then from Berserk straight into, you know. Some other, like, I don't know, what's the what is it, destroy? No. The, what's the cape?
Assault.
Oh my gosh. Assault Omnipower. Is the other threshold.
No.
Omnipower is magic.
Overpowered.
We're bad at this game. Overpowered. Jesus, thank you. Yeah, so you overpower under your with your berserk going and still within that 20-second window, or that 15-second window, and you get, you know, your berserk or your overpower becomes a 40% cost, right? Like, they're doing that same thing. Or actually, 30% cost with the Ring of Vigor passive, 20% cost if your ultis are 10% cheaper. Like, so you're pulling it down in the same way that they pulled Tsunami down in terms of the cost.
Yep.
So really interesting rotation things with the 2-piece bonus from this. The 3-piece bonus, Berserk being 6 seconds long. Berserk is already 20 seconds, whereas Sunshine and Death Sentence were effectively 38 seconds, right? Like, Berserk was half as long. That extra 6 seconds, because you have to spend time building adrenaline for melee, right? Like, less time now with all the adrenaline buffs they've been getting, but that extra 6 seconds is 2 to 3 additional thresholds, or channels, or bleeds, or whatever have you, to put out. Which is massive, right? Like, 2 or 3 extra thresholds that double damage? Wild. So that is the true DPS benefit of these robes over everything else, is that they make your berserk go berserk better.
Yep. I'm really looking forward to seeing how Soul Eckers uses this.
Are you, do either, sorry. Do
we're already one cycling the core.
Do either of you guys have a melee set that you have?
I mean, true masterwork.
I do. Yeah.
Okay. Would this bears for encourage you to go a little bit further?
So my issue is I only hybrid. Like, when I'm using melee, it's like my off style.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, with that being the case, like, Solak, it'll be usable, but when you're a Zirkin, it's already scary when you have Trim Masterwork bleed going.
Yeah.
So, damage. I can't imagine how bad this is going to be. Then Karapak will probably be even worse, because you're taking magic damage then.
Yeah.
But I think at Solak, this will be used as, like, hybrid switch, and it's going to cut down the world record time by a couple of seconds.
Yeah, we're already one cycling core. Core is the, we already know realming. We're already. I'd be interested to see if this makes, with all the buffs, if you could no realm on melee now. I'm willing to bet you
already could.
Might be
like, everyone using melee.
Oh, you could? Solo melee?
Yeah. Like, what do you mean? Like, everyone using melee on the team? Yeah.
Yeah. No, I just meant like.
Could.
Like, so, sorry, solo no realm. If you could solo no realm.
Oh, god.
With melee. I wonder if melee is like really getting up there, like to, because we know it's not staff DPS is crazy, and staff needs a nerf, and animate needs a nerf, because both of them are just unhealthy playstyles for the game in terms of balance. They make things I would love a Jmod to tell me how many 100 plus kills have been done off of magic. By groups that, or people, individual people who are not camping staff
in
Bloom, with anime. I mean, again,
all right.
Love the meta. It is what it is.
Anything else
are cool.
on the robes?
No.
I think they'll be fun to use. I'm excited.
Yeah, they're going to be fun to use, and I mean, if you're on that melee track, you're gonna use them. It's as simple as that. I think.
Yeah. The bow is next, Shane. I don't want you to read what it does.
Okay, why?
Because the bow is complicated.
Okay,
and we don't need to have it be complicated.
All right.
It's very
a tier 95
simply,
bow.
It's a tier 95 bow. Every 8 attacks, it fires an extra ability that does like 50% of the damage of the ability that fired it, the 8th attack. With that said, and it does, each hit stacks the thing. So like, a great example, rapid fire is 8 hits. Rapid fire will just hit this. Two things to be worth noting with this. The special attack makes that 8 hits go down to 4, so rapid fire would then fire 2 additional attacks. So effectively, rapid fire becomes a 9 hit instead of an 8 hit, because each of the extra hits is 50% damage-ish. And the special attack has about half the damage dealt of a Dark Bow special, on average. So effectively speaking, the special attack costs half as much as Dark Bow, and deals half as much damage. So 2 special attacks replaces the Dark Bow. For the next 30 seconds after using the special, the passive launches twice as often. The thing that they tried to sell us on for this... Well, hold on. Let's TLDR what that means.
All right.
Assuming you just keep... You can use the special attack as often as you like. It doesn't have a cooldown. Because it's not power creep, because dark bows are just better use of your adrenaline per time. Unless you need to keep the passive up. So basically, you use the special attack twice a minute to keep the special attack passive active.
Sure.
With that active, the bow does 12 to 15% additional damage, as opposed to a regular base tier 95 using the same ammunition and setup. 12 to 15%. That 12 to 15, that extra 3%, is based on ammo. So what they've been trying to sell us on is that, ah, yes, this extra attack that this fires off can activate ammunition.
Oh,
which would
okay.
be super cool if it was bolts. But it has to be fired from the bow. It's based on a passive, not a special. It cannot apply to bolts.
And this, you see the problem here.
Right, so the bow... I don't know if it's supposed to be a charge bow. It's not currently a charge bow.
It's
you
not.
Must use tier 95
yeah.
arrows.
It's
so,
not.
You have six arrow options that are reasonable for this. You could use it with Blackstone arrows if you really wanted to, just to get them stacked. It would work, but you'd lose three tiers of damage. So effectively what this leads you is the two Krosis arrows and the four arrows from the Antler God arrows. The problem with this is that, like, if you could use it with Hydrix bolts, you'd get 2 to 3 extra Hydrix procs per minute.
Right.
Right? That's great. There's a number of these things that it would be great if it could activate the bolt effects for. Right? It's extra hits for your poison. So what I should note is that the poison damage can tick on these, so it is 25%. It's an extra 20 hits a minute for your poison, which should get, quick math, an extra 3,000 damage a minute on poison, which is not huge. Each of those hits, if you're using a Blood Reaver, it becomes like 6,000 damage a minute. Still not huge, not bad. That's just from the passive with poison, but meh. But regarding the arrows, right, we've got six arrow options. Joss arrows and full arrows are just a damage buff.
Mm-hmm.
Firing an extra arrow does nothing but consume an extra arrow. So the bow costs more money to use without giving you the full benefit from your ammunition. You're still going to do more damage, but it's going to consume that ammunition 25% faster than you otherwise would. So those are kind of out for me. Splintering arrows, you no longer consume stacks once they're stacked, so those are just regular arrows. It doesn't really matter. It's fine to use, but it doesn't give you any extra damage, so we can ignore that. That's not a great choice. That gives 3 Elder God arrows left. Or no, that gives Death Spores, Wen arrows, and Bic arrows. Bic arrows are the only use case I see for these. It allows you to stack Bic arrows in 2 minutes or 2 minutes of total time, rather than having to go for about 2.5 minutes. And that's with two
which
people.
Which would open up the possibilities of where you might want to use it, but once again, you're
really.
Stuck with how many bosses at yeah. endgame are poisonable.
Well, and how many are poisonable, how many live long enough for you to do that? Your use case is still Arc Glacier, it's still potentially Solak for, like, speed kills. It's still, like, the use case hasn't changed drastically for Bic arrows with this. So, they're really expensive to use everywhere. So those are kind of out just based on the way that arrows are right now. And the arrows take so long to produce, Iron Man straight up can't use this with arrows. Like, Iron Man just can't use it.
Yeah.
It's not an option for them.
Yeah.
If they halved the time it took, if it was 5 ticks instead of 10 ticks to create anima arrows, so that I didn't have to get up and walk away for 5.5 minutes every time I started crafting some, like, imbuing some anima arrows, maybe you could create them fast enough to where Iron Man could use this, potentially. But as it is, nah, not a thing.
Not even close.
What that leaves is, like, a Death Spore and Wen arrows are a potential use case for this. You can activate your Death Spore passive faster, so you have to spend less time with Death Spores equipped to get your free Death Swift out of them. And Wen arrows can get stacked up faster to potentially, like, chain Wen arrow effects one after another after another. You might be able to hit some thresholds there, but those arrows require such intense micromanagement that you, like, there's probably only a couple of rangers in this game at the very high end. who could pull that off, and they're using a fractured staff right now because they have enough money to do so. So realistically, the bow just costs you more money in arrows. And that's kind of where it stands right now.
Is it a problem with the bow, or is it a problem with the arrows?
Both.
Definitely the arrows.
The arrows are being consumed too fast. The bow, again, we got a 295 staff. We got 295 swords. The 295 swords are not astonishing. But, like, the Zuck sword special is great. This doesn't stand out anywhere. You're doing 12 to 15% extra damage, but Joe Schmo over there is going to be like, haha, my ruby bolts do that. They don't. Stop it. But, like, you know, you lose the ability to swap back and forth between crossbow and bow as easily with this. It costs you more in ammo. It does do marginally more damage, but not fractured staff. I'm going to triple your damage output or double your damage output more damage. It's just meh to me. It looks cool.
And that's what I was going to say. Its looks are one of the things that is absolutely wonderful with it. So
it should be a charge bow. It has stats that look like it should be a charge bow. Like it has increased. It has a damage stat associated with it when you don't have ammo equipped. It should be a charge bow, and I wonder if that's a glitch.
Well, they said numerous times on live stream and such that it was designed to have it so that you would have to provide your own arrows.
Okay. Yeah. Well, then they ought to remove the damage number that's associated with it when you don't have ammo equipped. Because no other weapon, ranged weapon in the game will do that. That is a glitch, or that is something that is unintentional. That is poor, not coded correctly. Regardless, the bow is a meh for me. I'm sorry.
I want the listeners to keep this in mind, because you are a fan of ranged. You are a fan of bows.
I love ranged. Yeah, I have a fully maxed range setup. I have a fully max range setup. Yeah, I don't even own a tier 95 prayer for magic or melee. I'm still running dry gores and a scythe and seismics. I don't have even tier 92s for anything else. Like I love range, and all of the range upgrades for this. The stalker's ring change is nice for people that already use bows. The change to the hex bow is fun, where you can use a hex bow, but the hex bow is just straight up better than this bow. Like the hex bow just does similar damage numbers to this bow, unfortunately.
And I'd imagine we're going to have to wait a while for it to work its way through the community to see exactly where it lands and what the general thought is about what people want to do with it and such.
Yeah, and we'll see if they decide to patch it at all.
Or make any changes to it.
I don't think I messed up my math for this one. I'm pretty confident.
And hey, but like we always do here, if there's a question about the numbers or there's something different,
post that in the comments.
Yeah, because
if somebody knows better than I do how crits work, anything like that. I mean, especially any JMods that are listening that can really drop a confirmation. I'm like going off of how I've interpreted the wiki, but yeah, please let me know if I've said something wrong.
All right, I was hoping for more with the bow, but we'll have to leave it there.
It looks pretty.
It does. It does. And maybe that's what it was intended for. I don't know.
I don't think so.
No.
I mean, it does 295 damage. Like, it does have that going for it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. We do have a couple of little patch notes this week, if that's all right for us to go through. I think we've gone through pretty much everything else we wanted to.
Yeah, take them.
All right. Added tool tips to the following items, including our Hex Hunter Bow, Inquisitor Staff, Pterosaur Maul, Laceration, Fleeting, and Blast Diffusion Boots.
Still sad they're bugged.
Yep. Fleeting
Boots,
of course.
I'm sure they're working on it.
Yeah, I think I heard that they are. It's just a kind of an involved issue.
Yeah, so. I mean, it must be, because it's not just when a target dies. It's like if a target changes states, like when Yakka sharks explode, it will still stun you. Which is wild.
Yeah,
so.
I think I have had a problem with that there.
When Yekka's like Sharknado explodes out, not when the sharks actually go off.
Yeah. colorblind mode has been added to the ritual puzzle in Twilight of the Gods.
Let's go! We didn't mention it at all during the show. I would like to say I am incredibly disappointed in the boss in one particular way, in that I had a quest where they said, we're going to do a dry run of what it's going to be like to turn on the edicts, and they made me do Wordle. Now there's colorblind Wordle. And I went into that boss fight and I did not do any Wordle. No Wordle. None. Lots of letters flying around. No Wordle. Disappoint, Jagex. Disappoint.
With Yak-Track, it's now possible to increment all skill and kill progress while at the beach. And the biggest one this week, reduce the consumption rate of Dying Arrow variants to 1 in 3 for each hit.
Better. Still more than an hour of creation per hour of use, especially with Gricko. So it's not good. Like, the imbue time on them, I think, is the too long. Everything else is seems reasonable in terms of how quickly you can obtain them. But the fact that you can only imbue 15 every 10 ticks is wild.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it's really bad.
I agree. And here I thought we'd be needing a whole boatload of these. I made 50,000 going into release week.
I made sell them.
I made 21,000 Bic arrows last week.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it took a while.
Good for you. Did you sell those? Or was that for profit or for...
I'm just hanging on to them. I had the anima laying around, so I'm just going to hang on to them. Once I get the bow, we'll play around with it. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, sure.
All right, fair enough. And with that, folks, that's your Zamorak Undercity and the Zamorak Lord of Chaos with his rewards done in under 2 hours. It means we can move on to our picks of the week this week and achievements and other things. My pick of the week, I'm not using it right now, but the pick of the week this week is a revamp on the headset that we typically recommend in the RSBNB Discord. Numerous podcast hosts have it. We recommend this one if you're into online gaming and you want a more premium brand of headset. It's the Arctis 7 Plus. It's a 100% wireless headset. Has one of the best microphones that I've heard on a headset, second to the one that we got Thaxi using right now. Second to the one? No, yours is second to the Arctis 7. I'm sorry about
that.
Yeah,
mine is a $27 Amazon purchase.
Which doesn't sound as bad,
wired.
Does it?
It is wired and it works well, but
this is the Arctis 7 Plus is my gaming headset. It's the headset that Sirion uses when he's on the show. It's the headset Earth uses, headset that Tanis uses. Everybody otherwise uses this headset on the podcast. And if you're in the market for a, let's just call it a premium end gaming headset, it's definitely something you might want to consider. It comes in black and white. It's got a tremendous wireless range on it. I know Earth with his has been able to actually go downstairs wearing his and have it not disconnect as well. Battery life, you can expect upwards of a week if you use it for an hour daily. Of use. You'll get way more out of it if you only use it a couple times a week.
How's the comfort long term? Like, if I wanted to listen to 8 hours of lecture in a day with this, how are my ears doing?
I think that's going to depend on the size of your head. I know the 7 Plus is more comfortable than the previous version was.
I do have a small head.
Okay. and I know people like Sirion and Earth have worn this for, you know, hours plus on end, whether it's on stream or something like that. So, I mean, it's a question, I guess, of personal feeling, as with anything. But I haven't heard any complaints from anybody on the comfort side of it. So, but
nice.
It's from Steel Series, and we like them for their headset here. And it's actually got a really also sophisticated piece of audio software that drives it on Windows. And the fun part about that is that if you are an audiophile at all, you can completely adjust how the sound works, both on the microphone end and on the headset end, to the point where you can have separate EQ profiles. If you're listening to music or if you're playing a certain type of game, you can have different EQ profiles for that. You can have different EQ profiles for the chat, because it also splits the chat and game audio out, and you can independently control the volume and sound of each of those too. So for anybody who is looking for a wireless gaming headset, it's the one that we recommend. So that's that.
Nice.
Bears?
Cool. So mine is NCAA Football Revamped. So this is a EA game from 2014. They discontinued NCAA Football because of not being able to play the pay the players and all that stuff. So what people have been doing for the last 3 or 4 years is updating the rosters in this game themselves. They then modded it so you can then get a PS3 emulator on your PC. They have like instructions on how to do it, and then you can play on your PC. So I'm a huge college football fan. So in the last 2 weeks, I figured out it took me like 4 or 5 hours of installing the PS3 emulator, installing all the files for this. But I finally got it going, and then it took like another 2 hours of messing with some of the settings to get the audio right and all that stuff. But I was finally able to play as the most recent Oregon football team. And like seeing the players' names and seeing everything like that, I'm like, oh, this is so much fun. And 2014 was like right before EA like went all in on the Ultimate Teams, which is where they make all their money now. So this game was focused on the EA.
Did you say the Oregon football team?
Yep.
Go Ducks, but also every other piece of your online stuff is Chicago.
I went to the University of Oregon to grad school.
Okay, that makes sense. That makes sense. Go Ducks.
So yeah, it was so much fun to be able to play that, and I've played all the way up to the national championship now. I'm just kind of waiting and building up some time before I play it. I'm looking forward to it though.
Hype, get that hype.
Yeah, it was a fun project to sit there and work on for 4 or 5 hours.
That's
though.
Cool.
Alrighty.
And just like the dev time that they've put into it, these people aren't getting paid for it. But the cool thing is EA is releasing a new game next year. And they took about half the people who've been working on this revamped and hired them to work on the new game.
Oh,
that's awesome.
So like, yeah, so it's pretty cool. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that. It probably won't be that great, though, but low hopes. Hey. Maybe they'll deliver.
Hey, I mean, it's the same people. You can hope.
Yeah.
Alrighty, well, with that being said, let's move on to our achievements then. I believe Faxi is starting us off today.
Alrighty. Starting off, we've got Todio 22 with 99 agility on July 6th. Tanakit with 120 dungeoneering on July 5th. And Jesse Pinkman with 120 herblore on July 4th.
Nice.
Alrighty, we got Etmuaha with 120 constitution on the 3rd. Greeflex with 120 dungeoneering, and Todio with 99 prayer, all on the 3rd.
After that, we have WM Penguin with 120 invention on the 2nd, and Diocles with 99 archaeology on July 1st. Nicely done, everyone. Celebrating Canada Day and Independence Day with some achievements there. And I guess with that, I can ask what everybody's been up to. Let's go to you, Bears. It's been a while since you've been on the show. What have you been up to?
Yeah, so I finally finished my final boss grind right in time for Zamorak to get released and lose the
Congratulations.
Title.
Have fun. You'll get it back. Kills. I mean, it sounds like you're at least a quarter of the way there.
Yes, I'm about 30 now, so I should get it hopefully by end of next week. Nice. I've been doing a ton of Zammy, and then AFKing, and I'm getting close to the 120 and all. And
Holy
then occasionally
cow.
Getting on my Iron Man, if I want to.
How's that trim grind going?
Oh, I'm not doing any trim or any completionist or anything
Fair
like
enough.
That.
Fair
I
enough.
Told myself I could be the first 5.6er without comp cape. I
good
just
for
have
you.
No interest in doing comp.
Go, good
Skilling,
for you. I'm
fine.
The exact
comping,
opposite.
No
that's so.
Wait. You don't
that's
have comp?
So funny.
No, I'm not even close.
Shane got comp, and now Shane's like, "Wait, you don't have comp?"
I
didn't mean that in like a negative way. You can play the game how you want. That's true for anyone.
I haven't even done like Evil Dave's Big Day Out. I haven't even done my quest. There's no way I have comp.
That's
I'm
fair.
So far away from quest cape.
Oh. Lovely. I have been... I'm the exact opposite. This is hilarious for me. I've spent... So, you guys know I've been... I mean, we've talked about what I've been up to this week in terms of doing a whole bunch of runs to this, just chilling with the buddies in Discord. And then every day I'm also doing an Abyssal Slayer task because I've been on a long break enjoying playing Elder Scrolls Online and just chilling. Needed some time away from RuneScape. I did finish comp and trim a while back, and then I got an alt through Questscape and working towards both comp and Master Questscape. About a little over halfway there for both.
Oh, so my.
I burned out. Man. So I've been on a break for a while. So I'm like still checking in with dailies for that, but this week I finally started to get my butt back in gear for... I haven't had comp or trim since before the Sentistan Asylum, and so I'm finally working on that, and I have all the souls for trim. I've got the book for Master Questscape out of there. The only thing I'm missing is the gosh darn key. So as soon as I get the key from the Abyssal Lords, I'm like 400 kills in. I'm definitely dry on it. As soon as I get that key, I'll have my comp and trim back.
And we had you check to make sure it wasn't in the bank or anything like that.
It's not in my bank. It's not in my bank. I know. I search gate key. One's word, two words. It's not there. Gosh, darn things ain't dropping it. And it's not like it's not unlocked. I didn't just forget to put the rope down. No, no. I actually have just not gotten the key drop in like... And I've done it at this point 2 or 3 weeks worth of daily abyssal tasks there. So...
Oof.
It's getting bad. It's getting bad.
Yeah,
I got the soul
on
for them on Monday. No, of course there's not. It's not supposed to be that rare, I don't think.
No.
If there is a threshold, I haven't hit it yet.
It was the first one I got, and I think I got it within the first couple hours.
That's what most people have been telling me, is that they got the key pretty early, because you're supposed to get the key so you can get to the Lords faster.
Yeah.
I love running around through the Beasts area. It's great. Everything is lovely. Anyways, so that's what I've been up to.
All right.
Playing a little Elder Scrolls Online and getting that recomping, retrimming.
As for me, aside from Zamorak runs this week, still continuing it on the Yak track. I'm a little bit behind from where I'd like to be on this one. I hope to be rectifying that sooner rather than later. But it was interesting to throw my neck back into the PVM scene, because I don't know if the listeners know, but for the last... about a month or so, the only real PVM I've been doing is, you know, a couple of raids every week. I've even stopped the Reaper tests and such, which is probably a bad idea given just the kind of passive income that they bring in.
With money.
But it was interesting getting back into PVM and, you know, moving into that 0.6 second mind space again, which I'm sure you felt very interesting coming from ESO.
ESO with our exactly 1.05 second mind space, yeah.
Yeah.
Different.
So, yeah. But aside from that, I also just have to, again, show my accomplishment for the week of having the slowest solo Zamorak kill time in all of RuneScape at 27 minutes, 44 seconds. That raised tons of eyebrows, and people were absolutely asking me how I managed to pull such a thing off.
9,000.
Yep, 9,000 plus.
How many people have gotten a kill since we've started?
9,000 people have gotten a kill since Monday. That's what that means.
And apparently it's quite an accomplishment to survive for that long. There was a Reddit post about it. There was Twitter posts. There was conversation in the RSVNB and ClanQuest discords and such.
Oh, I didn't hear about the discussions outside our communities of it. That's funny.
Oh, my friends and I, we talked about it, and I was like, oh, wait a second. I know that guy.
Yeah,
like
he didn't do it intentionally. He was trying to kill the boss as fast as possible. Trying to kill the boss. For the record, everybody out there, for real though, just there's your new challenge for the day. Don't forget about this whole enrage stacking thing. I want you to go to pad 3, stand on pad 3 at the start of your kill, and then never kill any adds whatsoever. Ever. Like, don't kill the healer. Don't kill the protector. Just see how it goes. Okay? Okay.
And that's it for the week, folks. I couldn't sum it up any better than that, or perhaps any better than liberty or death has been the motto this week with Zamorak. So, to sum off a week of American Independence Day and, of course, Canada Day last Friday and a boss this week, it has been a tremendous week for RS engagement. Thank you. To everybody in our community, everybody in Clan Quest, for jumping on board with this. And I'll just say that RS really hasn't felt this way for a long time in terms of tentpole content release. So I think we'll just sum this off by saying that the team pulled off a wonderful release by this, and it's something that should be strived for in the future to try and have these tentpole content releases every so often. So big thank you to the RS Dev team, everybody involved for pulling this off. And with that being said, that's pretty much it for this episode of Update. If you want to subscribe, you can find us at update.show/subscribe. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Amazon, Pocket Casts, and more. Just visit update.show/subscribe. And of course, we're also on YouTube at youtube.com/RSBNB. There you can find the full episodes, the video episodes, the nibbles, including last week's Mod Stew, Behind the Crown. By the time you're hearing this, that'll be up in its own specific format. Mod Stew had a fun time chatting with us, and people have been generally very receptive to those. So definitely do check that out at youtube.com/RSBNB. And if you like what you see there, definitely give us a like and subscribe. It greatly helps the channel out. So with that being said, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. See you then, everyone. Take care.
Ciao.
Thank you.